Welcome to the English Florist Podcast, a fortnightly show about living the life of an event florist. This week, Lynn spends some time with friend and flower farmer Kimberly Fleming, the Marlston Farm Girl, a former florist for the Obama White House and movie set director. We visit Kimberly's farm to learn what's growing and why buying local is important. And in questions to the show, holding your nerve when being asked to match a quote by a competitor.
Well, hello and welcome to another episode of the English Florist Podcast. And the first thing you're going to notice is that I am full of a cold. I am the queen of the croak today. But as any sole trader will tell you, when the chips are down, the show must go on. And the show will go on regardless of my croaky voice, I'm afraid. I'm really glad that this is a podcast and you can hear me and not see me because I look absolutely awful. My nose is like a Belisha beacon. I spent the whole of Sunday blowing it. Anyway, on to other things. Really timely podcast following on from the previous one on where I buy my flowers, because this week I'm going to be talking about locally grown flowers here in my little patch of West Berkshire. And I'm going to be walking and talking with my friend and flower farmer, Kimberly Fleming. Now, Kim came, I think it was about 18 months ago. Well, actually, I think she's been here a lot longer than that. But I met her about 18 months ago when a friend, a florist friend, mentioned that there was a new flower farmer on the block. And I was just delivering some flowers to a lovely lunch party not far from where Kim lives. And so I reached out and sent her a text message, introduced myself and said, could I possibly come and see her? And there began a really, really special relationship. She is such a feisty woman. She is really amazing. And I don't want to give too much away because I need Kim to tell me her story to share it with you lovely people. But one of the reasons why I love British flowers is their fleeting seasonality. Now, I'm actually recording this podcast in the middle of February. And if I look out in the garden, there are only clumps of snowdrops, a couple of crocuses. And I think there was just one lonely muscari pointing to the sky. Blue and all the others are just kind of just a lush green. There are no flowers, there are no buds, nothing. There are very few flowers at this time of year. And when I actually meet Kim later on this morning, there won't be any flowers. She won't be gathering any flowers. She's actually cultivating and she's planting and she's got summer seedlings coming along. And I don't know whether all the seed sowing's done now. I'm not sure. We shall find out. But one of the things I really love about local growers is that word key, local growers. I think it's really important that I kind of reflect what's around me, what's coming up in my local area. And it just kind of connects the flowers that I'm arranging with the occasion. And it's just a real joy to say when you actually deliver a wedding, or you're delivering funeral flowers, or you're delivering a beautiful bouquet to somebody, a surprise bouquet, that you can sort of point out either this entire bouquet is locally grown, or that those poppies and those stocks and those anemones are all locally grown. It just means something. It kind of connects you to where you live. And for me, that's really, really important. As I walk the dog every day, I'm taking in what's available. I can see the catkins on the trees, and as I say, you know, as we progress through spring, there will be daffodils, and in the forest there will be bluebells. And it's just lovely to bring that seasonal element into my bouquets. And that said, obviously, for the most part, obviously this isn't the growing season here in the UK, although obviously there are lots of tulips being grown hydroponically for the most part in their millions, which is fantastic. But for the smaller flower farmers with plots not covered in polytunnels and sort of properly out in the fields, in the wilds of the UK, it's a much smaller investment in the land. If you're down in the Isles of Scilly, there will be narcissi being grown at the moment and cultivated and sent all over the UK. And over in Lincolnshire, lots and lots of glasshouses will be cultivating lots of beautiful tulips. Most of those will actually go to the supermarkets, actually, which is great that they are British grown. own. But for me, as I say, it's much more local and it's much more personable, generally speaking. So I generally know the people that are growing the flowers, and in the week leading up to an event, I will often send them a message, see what they've got and see what I can possibly buy. And very often this is in combination with flowers that I actually import from my wholesalers in Holland.
Driving in my van to Kim's, and you'll hear a little clinking in the background, and that's Maple. She is clipped into the front seat. And I just wanted to say that one of the important factors when buying local flowers is the proximity to me. You have to factor in the fact that for me, ordinarily, if I were to buy all of my flowers in one go, I could just sit in my office and open up my laptop and order everything. And within 24 hours, everything would be in my workroom, boxed up, ready for me to go. I don't have to go and collect anything. I do it because it's a labour of love, actually. And it needs to be worth my while. The flowers have to be the right price. They have to be the right flowers. And the people that I'm buying from, all of those things, they all come into play. The effort that I go to collect those flowers, for me, it's not at all about the environment. It really, really isn't. In some ways, it's so much easier for me just to not get in my van and spend 20 minutes driving somewhere. But I could, as I say, they could just all get delivered straight to my studio. But instead, I choose to have a relationship with those local growers, and I choose to drive to them and collect my flowers, make those arrangements. All of that is time and money. And it's an aspect which, as florists, we really don't talk about. We just don't. We just talk about the flowers themselves. But when you're running a business, everything pivots around profit, time, energy, whether it's really genuinely worth your while. I think it's really, really important to say that. And actually, buying locally really is worth my while. On a personal level, it really enhances what I do as a florist. Buying those local flowers, having a relationship with those local growers is perfect. And that is Maple just deep breathing into the heater in my van. Anyway, I better pay attention to the road. I'm soon going to be at Kim's. She's in the field and I should be meeting her there.
So it was a bit of a nightmare getting here, because Kim's field is on a lane, and unbelievably the electricity board just turned up. Literally, you can see the field from the road, and blocked it, so I couldn't get here. I had to go reverse for about half a mile, and then I met a Waitrose lorry, and then I met the Waitrose lorry met a Royal Mail lorry, and we were all reversing up a little tiny single track lane. It was a bit of a joke. Anyway, 25 minutes late, I'm in the field, and it doesn't look like it normally does when I come. I've got to tell you, it's pretty dormant. Lots and lots of ground cover with burnt holes in where the plants come up, just to stop all the weeds growing through. And Kim has got a handful of workers preparing the ground. And then there are some fences where she grows her legendary sweet peas. And seriously, they are off the scale. I mean, she grows a lot of sweet peas and they are bloody amazing. Some of the best I've ever had the pleasure of arranging. So it's really dormant. I can see she's got some daffodils coming up. Where are her tulips? I can't actually see where the tulips are. All I can see is daffodils. But she's just she's giving out the orders. She's got rose bushes here. Now I did have some of her white roses for a wedding in August last year. I'm a bit cautious with English roses. I don't have a good track record with them in that they don't last. But she does have some great... She's got three rows. So that's how many is that? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine. She's got about 10.
10, 20, 30, 40, 50. She's got about 60 rose bushes. And then the field. So when we drove up here, there is another field that has, it's almost the same size again. She's, looks like she's almost doubled the size of the field since I was last here. This lady means business. She's a feisty woman. If I didn't know her, I'd be terrified of her, actually. Really feisty, feisty, can-do attitude, which when I met her 18 months ago was just exactly what I needed. I did think, why am I doing this? And then I met Kim, and she's just like, yeah, she's got a real kick-ass attitude. She doesn't take prisoners, and I really like that about her. Here she comes. Where are your tulips?
Over there.
Ah, okay. So I've got, I'm going to rustle my piece of paper because I got a bit of paper with me. Okay, Kimberly.
Hello.
I'm recording.
Welcome to the farm.
Welcome
no
to
flowers.
The farm. This is a bit weird because normally we're oohing and ahhing, aren't we, over the flowers.
Isn't this soil beautiful?
That soil is.
It actually is.
It actually is.
Gorgeous.
So we need to start at the beginning before we get, because I know what you and I like. We'll just talk.
Squirrel
jump
moment.
Over. Yeah. We'll just talk and talk and talk, and you'll appraise me of the... Is that like 50% bigger? You just doubled
it's
it?
Doubled it, yeah.
Yeah. Kimberly, an American woman.
Lindsay, an English woman.
Here on my patch. What brought you here? Come and tell everyone how you got to be here.
Well, I met a handsome British man who...
What's he want?
Oh, yes. Okay, I bought one. Sorry, we're planting some bare root roses and we found the antifungal packet that we need to put in the ground. Met a handsome British man with a handsome British accent and married him.
There you go. So how long ago was that?
So we have been married, it'll be 7 years this summer, and we've been living here full time for about a year.
You're
but
right.
COVID changed all of that. We were never really intended to live here. But COVID happened and his kids were in school, so he had to come back and be with his kids.
So this is his family field.
Yes.
And
well, technically, this is our field
right.
on his family's farm.
Okay. And at what point, when you realized that you were going to stay here in the UK, did you decide that you were going to be a bloody flower farmer, for God's sake?
I decided that it was a good idea in October of 2020 when we were spending a lot of time here because of lockdown. And we sort of decided that we would give it a go.
I mean, I know about your background, but you were a florist, weren't you?
I was a florist, yes.
So where did the flowers and the flower arranging, when did you part company with the arranging and become a flower farmer?
Well, I never really have, but I never really wasn't, I wasn't a farmer, but I was a gardener. I had a ton of garden space at home. I designed gardens for clients. And sort of a little secret part of the story is that my husband has a house there that I kind of redid the garden.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't anything else to do. So
yeah.
I didn't have anywhere to garden. So I took a little patch of there's a field behind our house.
Yeah.
Dug up a 70 by 20 foot spot and sort of did a pretend farm in that space to see if I liked it. And then I just had this dream. I've been inspired by someone named Aaron Benzikin from Florette Farms and Florette Flowers, who is the OG flower farmer. And I've just always thought what she was doing was amazing. Amazing for the environment, amazing for your soul, amazing for the earth. And here we are.
So you'd stuck the spade in the soil in October 2020.
Correct.
And we are now February 2023.
So this is our third growing season.
Third growing season. The first year, how did you even begin to kind of reach out? I can't remember. Another florist told me about
you.
Yes. Word of mouth.
Yeah, she was fantastic. She was my first florist. And also when I did this, my husband, of course, being like the businessman, I was like, what's your marketing plan? How are you going to sell the flowers? I'm like, I don't know. I just want to do it. And we bought a red truck and we thought we'd maybe sell flowers going to local schools or local farm shops. And it became apparent at the end of our first year that we were going to be a wholesaler.
Right.
We were going to sell to florists. I mean, I still love to arrange. We do flower arranging workshops. We do little subscriptions for people. But, you know, the core of our business is growing for British florist production.
And it's just getting bigger and bigger every year. Every time I come, you've extended. You just don't do a couple of strips, though, do you? I mean, that's just...
Well, we had to have the second field because we can no longer drive around the first field because we started taking all the sides away.
Right.
We really just were... We cannot grow enough flowers to meet the demand, which I think is a sort of industry-wide issue here.
Yeah.
I mean, you tell me. You're the florist.
Well, it would be amazing.
I mean, if you could buy all British flowers...
If I could, I would.
Yeah.
I do import a lot of flowers, but, you know, you would always be my first port of call. Any local grower would be my first port of call because what have you got? What colour? How many, I think, is usually the question.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what did you grow first? Did you have, like, a strategy on what you were going to grow?
Well, I kind of, we put in the fall of October 2020, we put the perennials in.
Right.
Because those are the first things. They take a long time to produce, like the peonies take a long time. So we put those in, you know, and that was sort of buttoned up. So that was two quadrants that we had done. Then the next two quadrants were going to be annuals. So we started growing hardy annuals that fall. And then more, you know, half-hardy and tender annuals the spring of 2021. And I sort of, as a florist, grew what I knew I liked, what I thought florists would like. Like, I'm sorry, no offense to the people out there. I, bleepboard, hate Alstroemeria. I would never, ever grow Alstroemeria.
No.
And I understand that people like it. It lasts really long. But it's just not something that I would grow. So I kind of grew what I anticipated really beautiful, lovely florist like yourself would like.
And I wouldn't choose Alstroemeria. It's, to me, I mean, it's really unkind.
Supermarket.
It's a supermarket. You took the words out of my mouth. It's a supermarket flower for me. And my customers wouldn't expect me to put it in their bouquets.
No.
So I wouldn't buy things personally just because they're British. I want to buy things that I like.
That are beautiful
and
British.
Beautiful and British, exactly. And there's an element of quintessentially British, but actually it goes beyond that now because it's just, you know, I think the kind of mainstream things that you buy in a supermarket, yes, you can get tulips and stuff, but they're not like
they
tulips.
They don't look like,
They're not like English tulips.
No, not at all. And I mean, there's that Smith and Munton who grows fantastic tulips.
They are beautiful.
I mean, just gorgeous variety,
but
excellent quality.
Yeah.
And that's their focus. They grow those and they grow them better than anyone else.
But they're also in glass houses.
But they're not heated.
They're not heated, but they do. It starts their season earlier,
though.
Yes,
exactly.
Exactly. Yeah, and they grow hydroponically, and they're really fantastically good at it.
Yeah.
So they start the season for us British florists.
And then we can extend the season.
And then you extend it, yeah. Because they will be transitioning over to
ranunculus
and
ranunculus.
Exactly. So what have you got here?
These are the tulips. We have 10,000 here.
10,000 tulips.
Well, we did 6,000 the first year.
Look,
and it didn't seem like
through.
Enough. I know they're coming up. It's crazy. This weather is really...
Is this early? Are you worried?
No. Because even if the leaves... We don't sell tulips with the leaves. So if the leaves get a little frosted, it's fine.
And will you pick them with the root on? Or will you just pull them up?
We pull the whole bulb out.
Yeah.
And then we transition the beds to something else. But the second year we grew, I think, 15 or 16,000. And last year, if you remember, we had that heat wave in end of April. We had 8,000 tulips come up in 1 week.
So what do you do in those situations?
Well,
are you just, I mean, I guess part of your strategy,
basically.
Is it just constantly reaching out to more and more florists to know, so they know where you are?
Yeah.
And will you, I mean, it's easy for me because you're 20 minutes down the road from me, but what about London florists in the southeast? How will you reach them if they want to buy your tulips?
So we are, we have organized a driver with a Luton on Thursdays to drive a Luton full of flowers into London to our London clients. They'll still come and pick up, you know, for a big wedding or if they're heading down to Devon or picking up. We have a client who's doing a big, big wedding in Scotland. And so she's asked us to rent a refrigerator truck and drive them up there.
Right.
So of course we will.
Yeah.
But we're still a client service business, even though we're a farmer. We have to do what we have to do to And as long as the client's willing to pay for it, or, you know, if we take a big truck up to London and the florists disperse the fee amongst themselves, then that's great. And it's a broader reach for us, is to be able to get into London. There's a lot of florists out here, but there's, you know, times X in London.
Well, exactly. And ultimately, I mean, what I often find is that, like you say, last year was a classic case in point. They came up, and if I don't have a wedding, or it's the wrong colour, then you need to sell them, retail them somehow.
Yeah.
You need to shift them. Yeah. Yeah.
And we did sell a lot at retail to our farm shops and to our clients, you know, our local clients. But still, 8,000 is a huge nut for anybody.
It's ridiculous.
And conversely, the first year we grew dahlias, we had our first frost on November 3rd. So we had all through November.
Yeah.
This year, we had our first frost, a wiping out frost on like October 10th.
Yeah. So it's quite hit and miss.
It is.
Yeah.
You have to be sort of prepared for anything.
So tell me, the last 2 years, you've cut your teeth. You've made mistakes, I imagine.
Only about 7 billion.
You've made mistakes. You're learning from your mistakes. But what's the objective this year? I mean, you've doubled it. You've doubled your plot. So you're obviously going large, not going home.
So the objective is to, and not that we weren't a business. I mean, this is clearly much larger than a hobby size.
Yeah.
But not to denigrate people who grow on a lower scale, because I think the more people who grow on allotments or small scales or big scales or giant scales, the better off the British flower industry is and the better off the environment is. But my goal is to be a business this year, to run it like a business, like I have a P&L, really focus on costs versus, you know, revenues and, you know, be a business as opposed to just flying by the seat of my pants, you know, trying to be a swan paddling furiously under the water and trying to look, oh, I'm fine up on top of the water.
And is there a community amongst flower growers? Are there people around that you can reach out to if you have, I don't know, stuff going,
there are great,
shit happening?
Yeah, shit happening. every day. Yes, there's great people. Rachel at Green and Gorgeous has been somewhat of a mentor and been a great help to me. There's a great forum called Flowers from the Farm, which is a collective of British flower growers, and, you know, people often will ask questions on the Facebook page, or, you know, people will weigh in with, you know, certain issues. A lot of people lost dahlias this year, so it's been a big topic of conversation. You know, did your dahlias survive? You know, people lost, you know, their whole stocks of dahlias.
So what happens if they've left them in the ground, or should they have dug them up?
Well, you know, that this is the one year that it may have been better to have left them in the ground, just depending on how... Well, the layer, it wasn't just a thin layer of frost.
No.
I mean, it was frozen about 4 or 5
really
inches
cold.
Down.
Yeah.
And that will kill the dahlias. So it depends on how much they were mulched. Were the dahlias wet? Did they have wet soil? You know, we learned a good lesson today, like, or this year about dahlias. I mean, hello, put a fan heater in your barn. Like, you know, so we lost a lot, but we're okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And where do you buy all of your stock from?
We buy almost all of it from here, but we also grow our own stock.
Yeah.
This is the first year we've imported directly from, because we've expanded the farm and now we're going to have over 2,000 dahlias. We bought imported directly. So we're ordering, you know, 30 and 40 and 50 of a variety as opposed to 6 or 8 or 10.
So will it be like half a bed of a colorway or a variety or?
Yeah, we're trying some new varieties. You guys can't see this. Sorry.
No, those we're just going to talk through it and
We have three huge beds of dahlias, and the first bed, which is a little shorter, it's 45 feet. As opposed to 65 feet. There are 8 beds there. That will all be dahlias grown from seed.
Right.
So that is
from seed.
From seed.
So will you be able to, will they be flowering this year?
Yeah.
They will.
So that's where we're sort of trying to breed some new dahlias. See if we can get some new exciting varieties. We had some beautiful ones last year. Sadly, they got, you know, they were so small and so young that they got taken out by the frost.
And what have we got here? We've got some little holes, burnt holes.
Okay, so these are foxglove, which look terrible because they've been really horribly frosted this year, but you can see all this new growth here. So they'll be fine, but it's just was sort of a wicked winter. And even things that are super hardy we're not happy. But our Hesperus looks amazing. We've got...
Is that the really verdantly green?
Yes.
Over there?
1,400 of those growing.
I love Hesperus. White and purple?
White, purple, and lavender.
And lavender.
Pale lavender.
Nice. So when do you expect... So what's... I mean, at the moment, it's just... It's not like you're sitting around twiddling your thumbs. I mean, there are workers here. There are vans rolling up. How many people you got here today?
Four plus me. So five of us today. And we got the boys today, which it really makes life a little bit easier and less sore at the end of the day.
And you've built this little bank here.
Yes, we built that berm for family members.
So you only have two polytunnels. Everything else is... Just out in the field, you've got a little bit of...
We've got low tunnels, and I have a little greenhouse where we propagate at home, where we propagate on heat mats, and once they're growing off and they've got two sets of leaves, then we bring them out here and let them start to suffer in the cold.
So talk me through the season. So what are we going to start? We've got the daffodils over here on the narcissi.
Daffodils are coming out.
Yeah.
We did our first cutting today. We have our first sale going out tomorrow to one of our favorite florists, April Rose at Heckfield Place. I mean, no one's our favorite florist.
I was going to say.
You.
I'm leaving now.
Of our favorite florists. Actually, yeah. All of our florists are our
favorite. You had
first
florists. Cutting of
hellebores. So
hellebores,
we've got 190 stems going out to her today. So that's our first. Today is the opening day of the season.
Oh, my God. That is early. That's really early.
So, well, I don't think there'll be anything for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. So you've got...
We do have the first couple of anemones peeking through, but
really?
What are we going to do, sell three anemones to somebody?
Exactly. And will they cut... Do they cut and come again?
They cut and come again.
And what's under the fleeces
is,
here?
Oh, I forgot to open this. This is Nigella. This is the 400.
Oh, yeah.
Nigella.
400.
Del Flu and Mrs. Jekyll.
Look at that.
So we're trying to get a little bit of a jump on those. And they've really been happy out here. And this was sort of an experiment. We put them under a low tunnel because we seeded them here. So you can see that those will be like a next generation.
Yeah.
What we're trying to do, you asked about new things this year. We're really trying to focus on succession planting.
Right.
So this is our first succession of Orlea that was planted out last fall.
Fantastic.
Survived beautifully. This is our first succession of Agrostemma. Again, totally made it beautifully through that freezing cold.
Yeah.
Those two beds, that's about 450 ranunculus in the little...
Are they all right?
Yeah,
last year, you didn't have so much success with your ranunculus.
No, well, we learned from that. So we had the fungus gnat really did us in.
Yeah.
And we treated the ground with nematodes for the fungus gnat, and we put up flypaper to catch the gnats.
And did it work?
It worked. It's worked beautifully so far, knock on wood.
Fantastic. They look really vigorous and healthy.
And we keep now a thermometer in the soil in the polytunnel, and as soon as it gets to 50 degrees, we'll treat it again with nematodes.
Oh, really?
And it'll get a lot warmer in there a lot faster than
it
will.
Oh, let's go have a look.
See all the babies?
So what's...
I hope you like larkspur, because we got about 700
larkspur.
Of them.
I love larkspur.
And these are the cold frames. We've got campanula, which is just about ready to go out. Start hardening off, and it can go in the ground.
And those little yellow papers flapping, are they then for
the scarab fly? So that is the gnat.
Yeah.
That larva and eggs eat the roots of plants.
Oh, I see.
So we're trying two ways to stop them from forming. And so far, so good. I'll knock on the wood.
Amazing.
Cold
frame.
This is our first round of sweet peas.
Yay,
enjoying.
Look at those. Oh, I just love the smell in here. oh, wow.
Enjoying their first bask in the outdoors. And then these will... It's still too early to plant them. So we'll probably plant them in about a month.
And they're all going to be outside. You're not going to have any indoor. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't
have
the space for it.
Yeah. Fantastic. And what have we got here?
These are our larkspur.
Oh, look at
these
that.
Are all
there are
potted
loads.
Up. Yeah, they were just bursting in their 96-cell trays. So, you know, it's a lot harder to plant these 9-inch pots or 9-centimeter pots. But that's what we're doing. And then this is, we're chitting our ranunculus, our next round of ranunculus.
So you're doing succession again for the ranunculus as well?
So we're putting these in here.
Yeah.
So that you can...
She's just digging in the soil. Oh, look at
that. So they're starting to root a little bit.
So once they kind of root, do you just then
put them... Then we just put them in that low tunnel over there.
All
prepped and ready to go.
And these are ranunks.
And these are ranunks too.
Look at that. Oh my gosh, this is not. There were no Renunks last year, really.
No, there were no. This whole bed, for those of you who are listening and not seeing, we have a 30-foot polytunnel, and the entire bed of Ranunculus had to be torn out because it was eaten by
bugs.
The dreaded scarab fly.
Scarab fly.
And then some Sweet William and our Docus. And then, I don't know if you're aware of our cow situation that happened this year.
Yeah, tell everyone. I know. I spoke to, we were supposed to go to the pub.
Oh, that's right. We were supposed to go.
We were supposed to go to the pub and have a Christmas.
We were invaded by 30 cows who marauded through the field and pretty much destroyed. Like, we don't have any ammy. Right. Our first succession of ammy was taken away, so we're growing more ammy. They've ruined so much. It's boring to talk about it. And this is Canterbury Bells.
Oh.
And Cobia. This is a new one
I'm growing. Oh, I love Cobia.
Yeah, so I'm very excited. We got a little jump on that.
Look at that. It's just constant, though, isn't it?
Yes.
And these are those seeds.
These are all ready to be.
Ready to go.
10 new 96. So we try to plant at least 1,000 a day.
Wow. That's crazy.
And then the greenhouse can hold about almost 2,000 seedlings. So once they're germinated and sort of on their way, they come back out and live here. Now the larkspur, which you see, it's taking up about a third of the space in here. This is going to move outside.
Okay.
And then
you'll bring the next lot in.
I'll have to.
So we talked about this amazing plot and how it just goes from strength to strength year
thickens.
On year. The plot is thickening and widening.
It's widening, and that's what it's doing.
So you were a florist.
I was a florist.
And tell me about the backstory, the American days.
So I decided I was going to have a flower shop because we moved to the suburbs from the city of Chicago, my first husband and I. And I went looking for flowers, and no one had flowers. I'd say, well, where do you guys buy flowers? And they'd say, like, oh, this flower shop. And I'd walk in, and it was filled with Beanie Babies and picture frames and cards. And, like, and in the corner was a tiny little cooler with some flowers in it. And I had been, there was a place in Chicago called A New Leaf, which was this brilliant, it was almost like a wholesaler.
Uh-huh.
You could buy bunches of ranunculus for $7.50. Yeah. So that was sort of the thing, and there was nothing like that, and I decided I wanted to have a flower shop. So I asked my now ex-husband, if I could, you know, do this flower shop, and he, you know, could I get a little money? And he kept saying no, and I'm like, how about a little less money? And I'm like, how about like $100? And he's like, no. And I took my credit card, I maxed it out, rented a space in a building that was condemned, and it was a month-to-month lease, and opened up a flower shop and made my money back in the first week.
So did you have any floristry training?
No. We used to, and this is terrible to say because we didn't know any better.
Yeah.
Because we don't use Oasis now. There are different, better, more environmentally sound ways to design flowers. But I would have a brick of Oasis on the bar and the counter in the workroom. And when I say workroom, the entire store was 7 feet wide by 20 feet long. So it was tiny. I would just stick flowers in and see if they, I came back the next morning and they were alive. I'm like, Oh, look at that. You can put stock in Oasis. And I had no idea. But I had a design background. And, you know, all of the same things apply in floral design as they do in interior design or clothing design or anything like that. Mm. There's shape. There's texture. There's negative space. There's, you know, movement. All those things apply. So, you know, my floristry skills certainly improved along the way. You know, I didn't know how to wire anything.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, but I did take two girls who worked with me. We were about 4 years old at this point, and we all got on a plane, and we came over here and did a private 3-day class with Ken Turner.
Oh, my gosh.
And spent the day, the days with him. And then he had this wonderful Japanese woman who worked for him who taught us how to wire flowers.
Yeah.
And then he was having so much fun with us. He said, if you guys want to meet me at 5:30, I'll take you to Covent Garden.
Right.
When the old market. And we just walked in and we're like, pigs in slop. Like, oh, my God, this is so amazing. Look at the size of that ranunculus. Wondering why we couldn't have those things in America.
Was there nowhere that you could go to? Back in Chicago?
Not in Chicago. The New York flower market was similar, quality, but not the same.
Yeah.
It was just a whole another world.
So actually English trained florist.
Yes, that is. I'm trained by one of the best in England.
That's amazing. So then, so you had your shop.
And then
there's more.
There's more. So then we had a client who wound up going to become the social secretary for the Obama administration, and they asked us to be the florist for the White House. And I was married again at the same, not again, still same husband at the time, and decided that that wasn't something he wanted to do to move to Washington. But we agreed that I could go and do the White House flowers for a month and, you know, sort of teach them how to rethink the floristry, run a little bit more like a business because they were spending lots of money. And this is 2009 now, so the recession was full bore and things weren't going so well. So we were trying to be a little bit more austere. But I wound up staying for 8 months and designed Christmas there with Simon Doonan, a fantastic window dresser, one of you people as well. He's a Brit.
Of course.
And just had an experience of a lifetime.
So you really, but is this, you know, here we are in a field in West Berkshire. This is really it though, isn't it? This is like,
it's not Chanel anymore, baby. It's Carhartt all the way now. Carhartt forever.
Amazing, amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. I think I should come back in the summer when it's all just in full bloom and it just looks amazing.
And then we can have like a pretend visual experience for your radio listeners.
I'll probably post some pictures on my story and maybe share a few on Sunday when I put
the ones
this up.
That you when you got shot here professionally. Oh my god, you're so beautiful.
That was
you
amazing.
Literally look,
I wish I looked that good today. I have today's no hair.
She does, everyone.
Today.
She does. She
it's
looks
a lie.
Brilliant.
It's a vicious lie. But it's fantastic just to kind of sit here or stand here and think of what was, but also what is to come still.
I have to remind myself, I have to go back and look at pictures at this time of year because it's so bleak. And I just wonder, I'm like, did we ever have anything good? Did we sell anything? Was it pretty? Like, and then I'm like, oh yeah, we really did a good job. It was great.
Exactly.
But
you
if I were smart, I'd learn how to do a reel and do one of those, you know, up and down shots of before and after. But I don't know how to do that.
Well, I think I should take some now anyway. And then we can take some maybe in the spring when the tulips are up.
Yeah.
But it just, you know, it's a bit like Erin at Floret Flower. She just takes those amazing pictures, doesn't
she? They're incredible.
Just captivates. Yeah. But the reality is the here and now. The reality in the hard, backbreaking work is here. Putting it into the soil, getting your guys to dig and weed and dig in. I mean, you've got sacks of fertilizer. How do you nourish the soil?
So compost, blood, fish and bone, chicken manure, and muck. Lots and lots of muck.
Lots of muck.
We use mushroom compost sparingly, but we, over on the Foxgloves, we did a mushroom compost and muck mix, and there are so many mushrooms in there that it just sort of puts me off using mushroom compost. So I'm not sure we'll use it again.
And irrigation, you've got loads of taps and
yes, we
pipes.
Have standpipes, and we use drip line irrigation. We don't use T-tape or taped irrigation. It's just not as sustainable. It, you know, rips and shreds and breaks.
Yeah.
We have to take it up every year. We can leave the drip pipe down all year. We had just had an irrigation specialist out here to talk to us about the second part of the farm because got to make sure the pressure can make it over there.
Keeps up, yeah.
Yep.
And I'm just standing here looking here. No one can see this, but these are your clematis.
I know.
Which I have to say were a personal highlight for me last year. You just said, I remember I phoned one day and said, what have you got? I need, and I think it was a lilac-y, purpley, pinky wedding. And of course, most of my clients, I don't tell them what they're going to have because I don't know what I'm going to order. It depends what you've got growing. And you went, oh, I haven't got that. No, but I have got clematis. And I came out and you picked them. And they were, to me, just the most beautiful thing. I mean, there are clematis, of course. I can get clematis year-round from the Dutchman. But these were garden-grown ones.
Not, you can get the little tiny bell-shaped ones.
Yeah, exactly.
These are the big
dinner plates. And we literally had one Bobby Dazzler for each of the table centres. They were so focal. They just looked magnificent. So
I had one florist who got married last year and we cut clematis for her and she carried them. That was her bouquet.
Yeah, I can believe that. They were just off the scale and you've got loads. I'm just thinking, crikey, have you put any more in or are they just the same?
Just the same ones.
They're amazing. Amazing. Well, Kim, thank you.
Lindsay. Thank you. Thank you, really. Thank you so much for having me.
It's really...
Thank you for championing.
Championing.
That's really hard to say.
That's definitely...
Thank you for being a champion of British flower growers, because it's people like you who keep
it going. I just want to spread the love, because I think once you're bitten, once you realise, and I think it's a state of mind though, because it's like the serendipity of what, when I come, it's like every time you'd say, yeah, Lynn, they're in the shed, you know, go into the barn, I've left them there for you, and you've got little stickers on the buckets, and then I can see what everyone else has got, and I'm like, oh,
I wish I had
that. Want that too. And it's the fact, I know it's like that when you go to flower markets, which obviously I don't
always
go to
looking
London.
At somebody's cart.
Yeah, always looking at somebody else's, but it's like it's the excitement. And also maybe if I just give you, sometimes I said, oh, it's just a, you know, it's a small bouquet, just pick in this brief, just put anything in, here's like 50 quid and you just pick a bucket. I love the fact that's kind of like ready, steady, cook for me. It's just like a good florist can just turn her hand in the same way as if you were picking flowers from your garden to make a lovely arrangement. You just take what's the best at the time. And there's such a joy in that. So you can't always replicate from one year to the next, but that for me is the essence of what I do, is the not replicating, just the kind of the challenge, as it were, of what's available in that moment, just to make the best.
And working
with it, exactly. It's just joyful. It really
is.
Well,
we
really
never even touched on like how much fresher our flowers are.
Yes.
British grown.
No, but they are. I mean, so much so. And also when there's a heat wave, you know, it's like, shit, get over here now. We've got loads of whatever it is. It's just, yeah, I love all of it. So thank you. I'm going to come back again.
Please.
And we're going to talk.
Come back.
I'm going to talk through maybe the spring, summer, what you've got, where we are with it.
What we'll do with them.
Yeah, what we're going to do with them. Exactly. Thank you so much, Kim.
Thanks, doll.
You're welcome. This week's question comes from Amy, and it's on pricing. And Amy wrote, "Dear Lynn's, help. Recently, I had a customer query the cost of my quote. She said I was too expensive and asked if I could do the price of another quote because they preferred my flowers." This is a really, really tricky question, isn't it? Because why should you do your flowers charge the same as another florist? Because you don't know what they have actually quoted for. And I think for me, transparency is very important on a quote, and I often break down quotes to explain how I've arrived at that cost. You do need to factor in your choice of flowers, because one florist might choose much less, less expensive flowers, and it might be a much smaller arrangement. Of course, the customer sees your beautiful displays and thinks, "I want that." I mean, it's a saying that I use a lot. I want champagne on beer money, and you can't have champagne on beer money. And so I very often explain in my quotes, break it down and explain how I arrived at that overall figure. Maybe it's because you've got some really expensive roses or hydrangeas, or you've got expensive ingredients in your arrangement. Maybe those are the flowers that they particularly liked. You've also got to factor in, you know, the hire of the actual pedestal and the arrangement or props. So if you're building an installation, maybe you need to actually acquire all of those things or have them, you know, hire them out. And they need to be factored into your quote. It could just be simply you're generous and your skill set, and you factor in all of those things and you're VAT registered, and that adds another 20% on. And trust me, I have lost lots and lots of work to other florists that are not VAT registered. And when you actually ask, okay, you know, you haven't chosen me, that's absolutely fine, and you ask them why, it very often boils down to price. And although I'm not privy to that other quote to see what they've charged, I do question whether it's, if you are VAT registered, that can make a big difference. And so it's important when you're having your consultation to explain the florist you are. I certainly feel that this really helps me when I'm having a chat with my couples, to explain that I'm a generous florist and I use really good quality ingredients. I'm not going to skimp. I'm not going to down it, you know, sort of dampen down the exuberance of my flowers. it's not what they're going to expect from me. And it costs that much money. That's why I'm charging it. And so I liken it to a restaurant experience. And you can go and have a dinner. You can have a happy meal, can't you? Burger and chips. You're going to walk into Mackie D's and you're going to get your burger and chips, and it's going to fill the hole in your tummy, and it's going to do what it says on the packet. End of story. It's going to cost you a fiver. I don't know. I don't eat Big Macs. You can go to a gastropub or a Michelin-starred restaurant, and you're going to get beautiful food, beautifully presented, lovingly prepared, carefully chosen. Maybe the provenance of those that food is going to be much, you know, it's not going to be like a meal deal. And I think it's really important that you kind of convey that to your clients, that no two florists is the same. You're paying for experience, you're paying for ingredients, you're paying for quality, you're paying for size, varieties of flowers that you're using. And if they're looking at your portfolio and you're a really competent florist and you've got beautiful things, and then they go to another florist who's also, you know, bidding for that, and they don't have the portfolio, they don't have the skills, they're going to do a smaller, lesser arrangement. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying, you know, you pay your money and you get what you pay for. You know, if you pay peanuts, you're going to get monkeys. And so it's really important that you have that conversation with your client about who you are and how you charge for things. And maybe you will lose some jobs. It is inevitable. That's the way it goes. Competition is competition. But I think it's really important to be kind of just explain things. You know, you are more experienced, and yes, we do want that generous, luxurious, vibrant, huge pedestal arrangement. And so, yeah, actually, I don't think the other florist did show us any pictures like that. So therefore, we are going to go with you. Occasionally, you might be able to negotiate on one or two things and say, well, all right, then we'll do one big pedestal at the front, but we'll do a smaller one at the back. We can bring the price down on that one, but expect it not to be as big as that big Bobby Dazzler at the front. So maybe you can negotiate a little bit, but don't compromise and don't give things away. You have to, I think it's really important that florists value their skill set. And they value their worth. And also, customers don't appreciate this. Flowers are really expensive. And very often at this time of year, Valentine's Day, for example, you know, as a florist, to buy red roses, they are inordinately expensive. And yet very often the supermarkets will buy the cheap ones, buy them en masse, sell them at a loss at the front of the shop, so that the customer goes in and actually buys the meal deal and the bottle of fizz. They're going to make their money up on the meal deal and the bottle of fizz. Whereas a small florist is going to be paying a premium for her roses. She's going to be wanting to give the best she possibly can. And there is a price that is attached to that. And you need to be talking to the right customers for you. It's very important that you know, there are lots of customers wanting different things. Some people just want, you know, if they're getting married, they just want a bouquet. They're not interested particularly in the flowers. It's just when you get married and you walk down the aisle, you wear invariably a wedding dress and you hold a bunch of flowers. And for some people, that's all it is, just a bunch of flowers. But for other people, it is a beautiful, exquisite bouquet. And it's all part of the day, the importance and significance of those flowers. And for me, those are my customers, not the customer that wants just a bunch of flowers. Any old bunch, doesn't matter. Knock it together, not too big. It's just a bunch of flowers. So think about who your customers are. And also have a little bit of transparency in what you're selling and who you are and what you do. And hopefully you'll attract the right customers. And, you know, if you do, I mean, it has happened in the past. I have said, no, I'm really sorry that the quote is what the quote is. If I, you know, knock the price down, I can't do as good a job as I want to do, and therefore I'd rather not do the job if it's all the same to you. And some of those people will think on and go, fair enough, we still want you and we're going to book you at that price. So I think transparency, honesty, and knowing the customers that you're dealing with, that they understand the sort of florist you are and the service you're going to give. And if you don't get it, you don't get it. Onwards and upwards, I say. Delivery and setup and takedown are aspects of our quote, which I think very often customers don't expect. They're expecting to pay for flowers, and they're expecting to pay for maybe the size or the amount of the flowers. But sometimes I think we have to cut our customers a little bit of slack. They've forgotten that labour is a very significant part of what we're doing. And if it's a big wedding and you need a couple of florists to come with you, maybe you need a second van, or you don't have a van and you need to hire a van. All of these things are going to cost money. I think it's worth, for me personally, I tend to just explain by listing these things. So it's as clear as day. When they're looking at the quote, they know what they're getting. And the takedown and the setup are labour costs. If you're going to deliver something, and then you're going to have to stay, wait for the service to be done, and then go to the actual ceremony and move those flowers from A to B. Maybe you've got to load them in the van and drive them somewhere, I don't know, or maybe you're just walking them from one part of the venue to another. Either way, these things cost money, and you've got other members of staff with you that are helping you do that. Distance, how far you're driving to the venue, whether it's driving through London and it's time as much as the distance because you're sitting in traffic, or maybe you're driving, I don't know, from West Berkshire to the middle of the Cotswolds. You have to factor these things in. And I do find if you list these things carefully and clearly, and also talk to your client before you produce that quote to say what you're going to do and how you're going to do it and why it costs this much money, just cut them a little bit of slack. Very often this is the first time that they've actually dealt with somebody and they're buying flowers on a large scale, and you owe it to them to make them understand that all of these things cost money, so expect it to be around this amount of money. And if they want to then cherry pick the things that they definitely want, they maybe need to scale back a little bit, then allow them that opportunity if you can afford to do so. I really, really hope that answered your question, Amy. And if you have any questions, please send them into the mailbag. Direct message me and I will do my best to answer them. Let's talk about the flower of the day. And my flower of the day is from the Fritillaria family, and it's the snake's head fritillary. It's a really, really sweet little flower, a little bell-shaped flower that kind of nods downwards, and it grows between March and April. It's not a natural English-grown flower. I think it was originally from Asia. However, it's become incredibly popular, and certainly with my Dutch importers, I suddenly discovered them. I didn't actually know what they were until I imported them from Holland. But it's the most beautiful, beautiful little flower. And as a result of buying it as a cut flower, I now grow it in my garden. If I had a beautiful lawn, I would probably bury some of the little bulbs under the turf so that they would just pop up under trees, because they naturalise beautifully in a meadow setting. However, I tend to just grow them in pots so that I can cut them for my flower arrangements. They look particularly beautiful in little vases, and they look absolutely beautiful in beautiful bouquets, bridal bouquets. So yeah, snake's head fritillary, one of my absolute favourites. I brought the dog with me, of course I did. I don't really go many places without the dog in the van with me, so I'm at Greenham now walking before I go home. Can you hear? The birds are tweeting and the sun's up, and it just feels just joyful, really, really does. I just wanted to thank Kim for agreeing to come on the podcast today, just to share a little bit of love for British flowers, but also shed a bit of light on, it's a really tough old job, I have to say. As everybody knows, I'm not much of a gardener. I don't think I could ever do that job. I just love going there and receiving my bounty of gorgeous flowers. There's something, I just can't really put it into words what it's like. Excuse me, I'm just throwing the stick for the dog. I can't put into words how lovely it is when you know, and you've walked around the field and you've looked into those empty beds today, and you know the beauty that's going to emanate from those beds in the next 6 months or more. It's just, it truly is joyful. It's a massive labour of love. And like anything, small businesses, as you said, it's
small businesses looking after small businesses. We support each other. Locally grown flowers really do enhance what I do. There's no point doing a job if you don't really kind of get much out of it. Why would you? I raise my boys not to follow their, you know, hearts, their creative hearts, and do jobs that they really love. And one's a chef and one's a graphic designer, and you know, they love what they do, and I love, really do love what I do. And using British flowers, using seasonal flowers, is part of that joy. Supporting another local business, having a great relationship with those flower growers, is part of that enrichment of what I do. And I think when I talk to my customers about how I work as a florist, they get that. They completely get that and are really happy to trust me to do the best. Careful, Maple. Careful. Oh, my Lord. They do trust me just to go with the flow. What Mother Nature provides me with is what I'm going to arrange, and that's how it should be, really. It just makes for such a fantastic creative process. What is the point otherwise? I'm flower arranging, for crying out loud. It should be like that. It should be joyful and seasonal and spontaneous, and therefore creative. So that's why I'm a massive supporter of British flowers. And yeah, I use imported flowers. No, I don't have an ounce or a shred of guilt about it. It's what I do to earn a living. And those flower growers that I indirectly buying from through my Dutch importers are just as passionate about their products as Kim is in her field. But if I can just tootle down the road and fill my buckets, fill my boots with beautiful flowers, why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I? If you're a florist listening to this and you don't really understand or haven't really appreciated and got on board with British flowers, do it. Make this year your opportunity to really try it out. I promise you, you won't look back. Thanks so much for listening. Speak soon.
Join Lindsay Kitchen every 2 weeks for the English Florist podcast. If you're thinking of starting a business, and also for established florists who'd like to go behind the scenes, you can become a supporter of this podcast and enjoy extra snippings, where Linz reveals more about the business side of being a professional event florist. Today's Extra Snippings is available now, and in it, Lindsay talks about Valentine's Day, to see how it went for you and the Mothering Sunday to come, ideas and marketing, and being sure to quote accordingly. If you'd like to hear the exclusive Extra Snipping show, go to the White Horse Flower Company at whfco.co.uk. And click on to the Patreon link, or click on the link in your podcast player app here. Be sure to subscribe to hear all updated episodes, and follow Lindsay on Instagram at The White Horse Flower.